You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
Everything that Rick does, I mean, it's kind of all put into one person, but all of these qualities can be spread out on your team, right? People who are emotionally attached, people who identify themselves to their work, people who hoard because they feel like they need to have an area for job security, people who don't communicate well and shut their door because they prefer to be alone. All of these are outrageously common traits for knowledge workers. And in this article, they're in the same person, but it could be four different people on the team. And if management stands back and watches, then those, those qualities are just rewarded and perpetuated into the culture of the team.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides a person who happens to be in charge.
This is Paul Maslany with Zach Ruiz and Errol Dobler bringing you the Leadership in Tech podcast and its 31st episode. We hope you like this podcast as much as the last few. I know that we had a great time making it. We're excited to be airing our fifth episode of our second season. Keep checking back with us for more updates. The Technology On-Ramp presents the Leadership in Tech podcast, episode number 31. Stick around after the show for updates, guest info, announcements, and more.
Maybe you got lucky. Maybe you worked real hard. And just maybe that doesn't make you smart.
Unbelievable.
Think we're good?
Yeah, I think we're good now. I mean, it might still skip it a little bit, but this is all we can do.
Yeah. It'll be fine. All right, so we ready to go?
Yeah, we're ready to do it. Let's do it. Episode 1 million.
Oh, man. So, all right, today you scrounged up a couple of articles that are perfect for everything we've been talking about.
I really thought you would love them.
I do love them. I do love them. Because I think everybody is going to really be able to relate to them, whether they're in tech or not. So the first one is from a site called Free Code Camp. Is that the name of the site?
Yeah,
no, it's from a Medium. Yeah, Medium, freecodecamp.org. By a guy named Jonathan Solorzano Hamilton. And he wrote the article that said, "We fired our top talent. Best decision we ever made."
Literally the best decision we ever made.
So why don't you roll us into the article, since you probably have seen this before, or maybe you haven't.
No, I totally have. So this article, they tell the story of a fictional character named Rick, who is like the hero software developer on a software development team.
But I don't think he's a fictional character. It's just a fictional name.
Yes.
To a real character. Is that, yeah.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Supposedly it's a true story. And I've seen this all over the place. I mean, I think this happens like really a lot. And so they call him Rick, and he was sort of the main guy on the software development team, and he did everybody else's work, and he wrote all the code, and sort of increasingly became the bottleneck to everything happening on the team. And so the management fired him, and they say they fired their top talent, and the world got better, and it was the best thing they ever did.
Well, right, but you're leaving out some of the most important points, right? They started to rely on Rick to fix every problem in the world. The rest of the team just kind of sat back and didn't do anything because Rick would always take care of it. And then Rick became increasingly arrogant in his hoarding. And they talk about this one specific project where he had wrote all this code and it was going wrong. And then he would write more code to fix it, but it was all in secret and nothing was documented and nobody could really jump in and he wouldn't allow other people to help. And he would belittle his teammates and was basically like, you all are idiots because you don't even know how smart I am. And then, you know, they apparently tried to talk to him to try to get other people involved. And, you know, he was like, go to hell. And then finally management stepped up and said, all right, well, you've got to go. And then the rest of the team got together and simplified the code and basically erased everything he did because it was so complicated and just made some more simple and effective code, right? Is that, am I relaying that properly?
Yeah, well, so they to be exact, they simplified the product and the system. And so they decided that maybe they didn't need to build as big of a thing as the company was trying to build. And when they simplified the product, it allowed them to remove a lot of his work. He was trying to build something that handled every case, you know, sort of the Cadillac that would handle every case in whatever business they were trying to do. And they said, you know what, we can forget some of these edge cases and just handle the main case and build something a lot simpler. And then that allowed them to sort of shrink the product.
Okay, so in your mind then, so walk me through that whole scenario. Would, you know, it was it good that they shrunk the project and got rid of them? I mean, what have you seen that relates to what's in that article?
Yeah, no, so just they didn't, so they didn't get rid of Rick's code because there was a way to write it simpler. They changed the product to make the product simpler, which would allow them to write simpler code. So that's just a distinction. The Rick's code was, you know, Rick was writing what needed to be written to support a very fancy product that says, the article says that their code supported a dynamic workflow with over 15,000 permutations. So to do like 15,000 permutations of whatever it is they were building, you needed a lot of complex and maybe genius work. In reality, 99% of their actual business use cases only followed one of three paths. So if you take out right. the other permutations and just do the hard-coded three paths, then all of a sudden you can write a lot less code. And so that's a business pivot that, I mean, first of all, it makes sense. I would tell you they're building the wrong thing if they're building, if they're handling the 15,000 cases before they do the first three. So they were trying to build the wrong thing in the first place. It wasn't like Rick was making it overcomplicated per se. He was trying to build a more complicated system.
Hmm. Okay, so then let's go into, then there was a follow-up article by a guy named Tony Robinson. And that was on Medium also. And he responded with an article entitled, "You Fired Your Top Talent. I hope you're happy.
I hope you're happy."
And essentially, I hope you're happy. So essentially what Tony says is he basically defends Rick and says, where was management? Why didn't they intervene sooner? Rick, poor Rick, was working, you know, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And when you confronted him with his bad attitude, of course he was completely justified in reacting harshly and angrily, and now you all are just proud that you dumped him and, you know, tried to erase everything he did, and it's really not Rick's fault, it's management's fault. Am I assessing that correctly?
Yes, and I am totally on Rick's side in this.
Okay, so I'm on both sides. I agree.
Here we go.
I agree with both. First of all, Tony, good for you for coming to Rick's defense, but it sounds like you weirdly relate to what happened to Rick. Like maybe you've been in that situation. So there's a lot of emotion in Tony's article.
I weirdly relate as well, and you just hit it right there. There's emotion. So here's one fundamental fact that you have to understand, and this happens. software developers get emotionally attached to the projects they work on. And it's proportional right. to how much work you put in. And that emotional attachment is real. And if left unchecked, right, an emotional attachment to something will make you act the way, you know, in ways you may regret. But that happens.
Yeah.
And that clearly happened to Rick.
Yeah. So, you know, let's talk about your perspective on the leadership angle and just, you know, walk me through now what you think as being somebody who was probably, you know, that superstar coder, right? Because we know that that was your specialty and that's what you love doing. And really everything you talked about last year, you know, you love just kind of closing yourself in and getting lost in your code. And that's what they talked about, Rick, here. And then as a leader of teams where you acknowledge, you know, you had some struggles early on and now how you've kind of changed course and those struggles that you had in the past, you're not finding them anymore. Some basic leadership tactics. So kind of walk me through, you know, where you are on this whole thing from A to Z.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly believe these two articles almost exactly sort of highlight why this podcast exists and why leadership in tech is such an important topic, because this is showing you a real glimpse into the dynamics of a software development team that happen everywhere. And, you know, this is an extreme case. And so Rick may be like sort of the extreme of like, you know, hero developer, but like every team has people, has one person on it that may be a little bit more like Rick and has management on it that may not know how to handle. So like this case highlights like every software development team in my mind.
So have you been Rick?
Yeah.
And maybe not with like the emotional craziness.
Yeah. Not to this extreme. Like, yeah. Not to this extreme, but yes, yes. There's been small times where I would have a whiteboard in my office and I would be the person that everyone would come to and I would take time to try to explain the perspective on the whiteboard for every other person on the team and then go away and hope that they would do something and maybe they didn't. And I wouldn't really understand, you know, you sort of get that mentality of if you want something done, you got to do it yourself. So sure, right. Not to this extreme, but yes.
Yeah.
I've been sort of one of the more productive people on the team and unaware of any leadership style. And so engaging with my teammates in, you know, ways that are similar to this.
And then as a leader, did you have a Rick?
No. But again, I think almost every, I think most software developers are some version of Rick. And so I have software developers that get emotionally attached to their code that you have to like understand that, right? Like I have like, every employee has sort of different issues or angles, right? So you have to be aware and account for it, right? So the emotional attachment is a very common one. There's software developers who are really talented that get a little crazy, like if you start talking about a new feature or a new requirement or a bug they did or some sort of change, and you have to work through just a little bit of emotional attachment and then get back to sort of sanity and logic and, you know, help them understand that if there's a bug in their code, they didn't like commit a sin, right? Or it's going to be okay. The customers aren't going to like fire them because there was a bug in their code. And so there's just a little bit of, I don't want to say coddling, but you have to understand. Like if you sort of have to understand the situation to know the issues.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we've talked about before, you have to understand the issues to address the problems. And that's not, right? That's micro-knowledging, as we call it. As the leader, you have to be involved with what's happening. You have to know what's happening. So when a problem comes up, you can handle it without having to go back to the very beginning and saying, okay, well, explain to me what's happening. Because I was just trying to, you know, let everybody do their job and not micromanage. And now you get kind of a half-hearted explanation and you feel like you need to make this snap decision and it's not a complete decision. Whereas if you just knew what was happening, not necessarily micromanaging what was happening, but if you knew, you could see it coming. You'd be like, well, this is, things are getting a little out of control here.
Yeah. Well, so like I think of it, like when I first was sort of in leadership roles, I always had a very dramatic idea of leadership, which is like sort of you stay out of stuff until and like let it happen over there. And then if you were to get into it, then you have to make big moves. Right. And sort of like, right. Oh man, now I got to get into this and someone's got to get fired or something big has to happen. But, and not that, which is, I think, the opposite of what you're talking about, micro-acknowledging, where you sort of stay connected all the time and make little tiny moves every day so that you never get to the big dramatic moves. So this article is a very clear example of management staying away and watching Rick and the team from afar and then waiting so long that there was only huge dramatic moves left on the table, which are probably not the best moves.
Right. And I'm going to say that Rick probably had clearly a very strong personality and his leadership was weak because there was clearly evidence. If he was the main person working on a big project, leadership can't ignore that. Whether they want to be hands off or not, they certainly know how the project's going, you know, whether the customer's happy or not, and who's in charge of it. And they just, in my mind, they were afraid to say something to Rick, right? Because Rick had built this persona and Rick was the man and you didn't challenge Rick. And the further you let that go on. So I think that probably in the end, just, you know, reading this story and, you know, just kind of thinking about what the situation, maybe situations I've seen, that Rick was probably going to get fired anyway, probably needed to get fired. Anyway, because he was probably super arrogant. And even if the management did step in early and say, you know, there's some problems we need to simplify or we, you know, whatever we need to do, focus on the first three threads of what's important. You know, it sounds to me like he would have blown up at him anyway.
No, but
in which case you've got a leadership.
I disagree slightly. So I almost put this in the same category as like when we talked about the CEO of Uber, Travis, in the last episode,
right?
Which is Travis. You know, we were saying that maybe Travis was not the same person on day one of the Uber startup as he was, you know, years later when Uber is one of the biggest companies around, right? And so the experience changed him. So I would posit that Rick was probably not crazy arrogant to start with and maybe not so difficult to deal with. And being sort of isolated and left alone and sort of have this heaping stuff more and more over the time at his company brought out some of his worst qualities to the point where he's now a caricature of his former self, right? Who all some of his worst traits are exaggerated. And because he's so emotionally attached and so caught up and sort of maybe fighting for, you know, whatever he believes is right, whether he, you know, another thing besides emotional attachment is sort of identifying yourself through your work, right? And so, yeah. If I'm building a piece of code and it doesn't, if I can't get it to work, then, and I identify with my work, so that, like, then what's happening? I'm not able to do something like that. So I'm not somehow good enough. So if Rick is tackling a product that has 15,000 permutations and is wildly more complex business-wise than it should be, and he can't quite get it, then he's probably feeling like, his genius isn't enough. Maybe he's not the genius he thought he was. And so throwing more and more of himself into it so that he can like solve this problem because he needs to solve problems, right? And so that would almost be like me saying, Errol, you would only be good if you could climb Mount Everest. And so you take it upon yourself to dedicate your life to climbing Mount Everest and you get yourself killed. Right. Like Rick seems like he was trying to climb Mount Everest with this crazy product and not handling it well.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in this now that we're talking about it. I've seen Rick in my businesses and you know what? You're right. he probably wasn't that way coming out of the gate, now that, you know, upon reflection. And then he was created that by management letting that whole thing happen. But what I will tell you is that at some point, from my experience, Rick becomes a runaway train.
Right.
You can't turn it around.
Yes.
For some reason. You just, even if management all of a sudden has this epiphany and says, wow, we've got, and they do everything right, at some point, it's a lost cause. And typically what happens is, right, Rick gets fired. And then he resets himself. So the whole experience ultimately will be good for Rick. You know, he'll realize that, you know, wow, A, I'm still really good at what I do. Wow, how did I let this happen? You know, when something traumatic like that happens, generally people take the good lesson out of it. The worst thing that happens that I've seen, and it's actually prompted me to leave organizations because I've been so frustrated with leadership, is when they let Rick continue. And when people say, like, hey, management, we've got a problem with Rick. All of these things, like unemotional complaints, you know, why are we letting this happen? Why are we letting Rick get away with this? Management, you need to do something because Rick is isolating everybody else. And when management is so weak and they're so afraid to confront Rick, I at least give credit for that leadership team to at least at some point jump in.
Right.
So yeah, they may have done Rick a disservice, but at least ultimately they stopped the bleeding.
Right. They finally stepped up and took a dramatic action that they had to take.
Right.
And I agree. Runaway train. It was definitely a runaway train. And I think a lot of, you know, that's the unfortunate part is if you're letting your projects become runaway trains, right, and then having to take dramatic actions, then that's not even near efficient, right?
and you hit the nail on the head. If as a leader you have to take dramatic actions, sometimes that happens. But that's got to be, if you work in a way that you prevent having to take dramatic action, then oddly you'll be more ready for that dramatic action when it happens, because it's something that everybody will probably get behind to try to fix, because hey, that's not the way we do business. Our boss is usually involved. He knows what's happening. He asks questions that allow us to make, he sees problems coming. So then he asks us questions and we can make small adjustments. And it's like, you never even noticed it happen. And then all of a sudden this big thing comes up and like everybody goes, wow, this is weird. This happened. Let's all rally around each other to fix it. That's the way it typically goes when you have good leadership. The other thing that's really sticking out to me is the emotion. You know, there's a difference between taking pride and being emotionally invested. And I think a lot of times people lose sight of those differences. And I'll give you an example in my business when I was with the FBI. And not so much with the SEALs, because as SEALs, we were very in tune to letting emotion go when we had to operate, because we knew the consequences of that. But in the FBI, it was not quite as ingrained. And a lot of times people felt like they needed to show their emotions to show everybody how much they cared. You know what I mean? And it was, oh, I'm, you know, they're going to do this operation and, you know, there's a risk of failure. So they had to walk around with this emotion to show everybody how much they cared. And I remember I did a lot of operations that were very dangerous, that were well thought out. There was a lot of calculated risk. And I never really made a big deal of it. And I had people question whether or not I was engaged, actually engaged, and knew what the risks were, because I wasn't showing enough emotion. And I would just very...
You'd be like, no, this is my Navy SEAL face.
I would just be like, what does emotion have to do with this? I am fully aware of all of the dangers involved in this. That's why this plan accounts for it. You have the plan. I briefed you on the plan. Did I not tell you that there are dangers here, here, and here, and here's how we mitigate them? But in the end, this is a dangerous operation. Well, yeah, you did, but you just don't seem like you care. And I would say, me not showing emotion doesn't mean I don't care. You should see how much I care by how much I've accounted for this. So
I'll also vouch, I consider you a very sensitive guy, so I don't know what they were talking about.
Right. No, but it's true. Right? So there's plenty of room for emotion in our lives. If we're letting our work dictate our emotions, then this is what happens. Rick is what happens.
Yes.
Rick's downfall is what happens. And the Ricks in the world, and that goes into the next thing we've talked about, life balance.
Yeah.
Right? You are wrong if you are working 12 hours a day, week for 6 months. You are just wrong. Okay? You're doing something wrong. And you are letting emotion in your work take over your life. And this is what happens. So there's a lot to all this.
Yeah. Let's, I mean, everything that Rick does, I mean, it's kind of all put into one person, but all of these qualities can be spread out on your team, right? People who are emotionally attached, people who identify themselves to their work, people who hoard because they feel like they need to have a area for job security, people who, don't communicate well and shut their door because they prefer to be alone. All of these are outrageously common traits for knowledge workers. And in this article, they're in the same person, but it could be four different people on the team. And if management stands back and watches, then those qualities are just rewarded and perpetuated into the culture of the team.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right. And it is, in the end, like I've said, with every example, with every episode we've done, this is a leadership failure. Right. Tony Robinson, who wrote, "You're fired. You fired your top talent. I hope you're happy." And he responded with kind of an emotional response. But yeah, he's right. You know, ultimately, he's right. It was a leadership failure. And so, what are the lessons here? Right. Emotion. Take pride. Don't get emotional. You know, life balance. If you are spending all your time invested in whatever work it is, it will eventually blow up in your face because it's unsustainable. If you can't go home and play with your kids, go out to dinner with your boyfriend or girlfriend or significant other and not talk about work. If you can't just veg and watch the game, if you can't do any other thing besides think about your work, it will eventually explode in your face. And it's incumbent upon the leadership to recognize that, to be involved. This is wrought with leadership issues.
Rich, wrought. So, what I tell people just on that point is, I usually tell the people on my team, and I think I got this advice from Tim Ferriss, which is never put all your eggs in one basket. You should never devote more than 8 hours of your day to one egg. So, if your main job,
like that,
you can work 8 hours. If you want to code for 4 more hours because you like it, some people like to write code or do products or participate in tech for 12 hours a day. That next 4 hours shouldn't be your day job. Like, go have a side project, go, start your own side gig, whatever. Do something else. You don't want all your eggs in one basket because then you're really attached to your company, right? And like you're saying, there's more to life. And so you should be able to participate in other things and do other things and have other interests and not put all your eggs in one basket.
So let's go back. Let's talk about how should this have looked from a leadership standpoint? If you're the leader, and again, I don't need to know anything about technology or coding or these types of projects, but what I do know is all the things that we talk about, there should have been a plan.
Well,
right? Here's the situation. Go ahead.
I mean, I would even go back before that. So I would look at it in two levels. So one, there's leadership of the company and what are we building, right? What are we building and how are we attacking our market? And then there's sort of the day-to-day leadership of how are we dealing with our people? At the end of the article, when they talk about after they fired Rick, what are the things they did? They got agreements from project sponsors to shut off edge cases. They cut out 14,997 permutations and only hard-coded 3. All of these things, from a business perspective, should have been the first things they did before Rick ever even wrote his first line of code. And so, I mean, whoever the leadership was had no idea how to build a product in the tech space, literally none. And so they were on the wrong course from day one. Before they even said about Rick, like what he should be doing, they picked the wrong thing.
Yeah. And so I love that perspective. And it still though goes back to they didn't have a plan,
right?
The bigger picture plan.
Or they had a bad plan. If they had a plan, it was a bad plan. They had a plan of like, let's have our Navy SEALs go take China.
Right.
Like, okay.
Exactly. Well, you're exactly right. And the reason it's not a plan is because you're right. They thought they had some plan, but they had an incomplete plan. So when they talked about actions,
I feel like if someone told you to lead a team of 10 men to go take China, you would be in a pretty bad mood too.
Right. Yeah. Right. And if you go through your planning process, you know, you say, all right, what are those actions that we need to take to take China? You're like, well, these are impossible. And then, okay, but let's just say I keep going through it. These are the actions. What are the contingencies? Well, there's a million contingencies that we can't account for, that we can't adjust to. Okay, well, how do we communicate? Who's in charge of this? Well, it's too big for anybody to be in charge. You know what I mean? So if you go through a complete planning process, you can eventually see this is a bad idea.
But this is what's so fascinating to me about sort of knowledge work in this area is when we say it like that, when we say Errol's team is going to go take China, and it's all like real life and we can see it and we all know how big China is, we know that's a joke, right? We know that's ridiculous and the plan would fall apart. But when it's the digital, when it's technology in the digital world, right? Take China could mean build this, and build this could literally be as big as China, but you don't know that, right? Errol, I want you to, we're going to build this website and it's Facebook, right? Well, on day one, Facebook sounds like a one-page website. Today, you would know that Facebook is as big as China. Right. And so you could have a plan to set Rick to literally be as ridiculous as take China, and no one in the room would see the red flags to say how ridiculous that is.
Right. But if they, well, first of all, Facebook didn't start off as China, right? It started off as an idea and a one pager, and then it got that big.
Right. Right. Because Facebook didn't start off handling 15,000 permutations. They started with 3. And then they added the 15,000 later. This company started with the 15,000 and then realized after they fired Rick, maybe they should just do 3. So they were literally trying to take China, and Rick was doing his best to make that happen because he thought he might just be genius enough to do it. And no one can really see how ridiculous that is until, you know, a year later when it's like, Jesus, we were literally trying to have Errol and his team like storm 100 miles of beach. How ridiculous is that?
Right. Yeah. You know, and it's so, what are the takeaways then from this episode? Like, right. Good story. Everybody is recognizing that this happens. I, in my mind, a couple of leadership takeaways, right? First of all, leaders have to be involved early and heavy. The front work is the most important work. Okay. You can be in people's butts early on. So you know exactly what's happening. So everybody is clear on what the plan is, what the actions are, what the contingencies are, who's in charge of what and how we communicate it. Okay. And then you give them the freedom to work. So that's the first takeaway. Leadership was not, and to your, all your technical takeaways, right? They didn't see, they said, let's take China. So leadership was not involved clearly either in a competent way or in just a presence way early in this project. Second, clearly they didn't have a plan because one person was taking on what appears to be 98% of the work. Okay, that's a bad plan. That doesn't account for any contingency on what happens if Rick gets sick, right? What happens if, God forbid, something happens to Rick and he needs to leave? What do we do then? Okay, so again, takeaway, planning process. Next takeaway, emotion, watching your key person lose their mind needs to be nipped in the bud. It sounds like in the article, they talk about, well, they tried to convince Rick to take some time off. Well, like you said, too late,
man.
Too
late, man.
Too late for that.
I've been trying to tell you to take some time off, but it's too late. Right. You're like, no, I'm doing this.
So So again, so we've talked about psychological safe zone before, checking the emotions of what people are saying, or when people are telling you something, feeling the emotions behind it, having that empathy. The first time Rick started to lose his mind, leadership needed to be in tune to something's problem. There's a problem. We need to address this now. Okay. And that's not easy. It's hard. That's why leadership is hard, but you need to recognize it. So that's another takeaway. You know, again, emotion and pride are two different things. And leadership in this case failed. And along those lines, life balance, right? For God's sakes, do not let your people work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for 8 months. It's stupid. Okay. Everybody's doing something wrong. Even in the FBI, when you run really complex investigations that take a while, and you have authority to listen to, you know, legal authority to listen to people's phones, that's a lot of work. You know, I always, you know, just on a side note, I always love it when people say they're listening to all of our phone calls. Do you know how many people it takes to listen to one person's phone call? Like, the idea that we could just randomly listen to everybody's phone call is so funny. Anyway, but I digress. So the, you know, even when you're in charge of that operation, yeah, it takes, sometimes it is 6 months long, and sometimes you feel like you are working 12 hours a day, but you know that there's an end in sight, you know, and even the good leaders tell the person in charge, take today off. Just don't come in. We have you covered. Go rest. Go see your family. Okay. You have to be able to see that. And do not confuse, again, emotion with pride. If you let emotion get in the way, you will fail every time. That's why, you know, that's why as the SEAL teams, it's unemotional, right? There's enough emotion out there. But if you go unemotional, methodical in your planning process and your execution, when things go wrong, you just fix them. You don't lament, oh my God, we're no good, or whatever it is, you know? So those are my immediate takeaways. Are you on board with those?
Oh yeah, I love those. I love those. And my takeaway, really just one high level takeaway, in these software teams, we're building products, right? And so we tend to think of, you plan up front, right? And then you're kind of into it and you're building it and things go a little sideways. And the tendency is like, well, we've already started, let's just finish it and then we'll reevaluate, right? Or we're already into this and it's 3/4 of the way built, let's just put our heads down and ignore this and that and just get to the across the finish line. And you think that you can't make changes or stop because the product has to be built or the world's going to end if the product's not done by this date. And so you double down and triple down and quadruple down on your current situation. And this article shows you, they even if they were long after their deadlines and they'd been going one direction for so long, they stopped, they made a change, and the world didn't end, right? And so right. I think that lesson can be applied to everyone. Like, if you're looking around and your project is going a little sideways, no matter what the deadline is, no matter how like business critical is, you can make a change right now, right? Like, you guys can do right. something different today to like, and it's all going to be okay, right? You don't have to wait until year later.
Right. And the customer will probably appreciate it.
Yeah. Just fix it. Don't wait. Don't wait 2 years and then start from scratch. You don't have to wait till the end. Just start.
Right. It's instead of saying, hey, we delivered the project on this date, like we said, even though it's crap, though it's not really what you want, they would probably appreciate if they got a call and said, you know what, we got a little sideways, we need to fix it because right. we don't want, you know. So yeah, I think I would still be annoyed, but I'd be like, well, at least you're fixing it.
But because if you just keep going, you're not, like, you're just delaying. You're delaying. In this article, they were delaying the amazing world of not having talent anymore, and they were able to really they should have changed way earlier. You can change today, right? You don't have to let it keep festering.
Well, and the other thing is, and I don't want to keep saying, the final takeaway is, you know, I've seen also companies, organizations, whatever, get too dependent on one person, okay? I was literally with a client, it was a group, and we were talking about, you know, my point to them was, everybody is replaceable. And I said, I'm replaceable. You can get other leadership folks. You're replaceable. You can get other lawyers. You're replaceable. You can get other marketing people. And literally, I focused on somebody, you know, another position. And I said, then they're replaceable. And I had a couple of people go, well, no, they're not. Right. And in my mind, what I wanted to say is, if you don't think they're replaceable, then they're the first person you need to fire. Yeah. Because they will take over everything.
Right. Well, okay. So I was that person for sure. So I might not have been a Rick, but I was that person. I mean, there was one startup company I worked at where at one time there was 20 of us, and they had to fire people, unfortunately. And I was literally the last person that left. So which just sort of proved that I was sort of that person. The problem was, in the beginning of my career, I thought I was irreplaceable, right? So I sort of knew I was that person and thought, like, man, this project's going to be really tough without me, right? And there was a time in my career where I sort of, the light went on and I realized, and I guess it was after I had left some projects, because I've worked on a lot of projects and a lot of companies and left, and always seen that the company went on, survived, flourished after I left, right? And so I realized in my own mind that I, even though maybe my boss thinks I'm not replaceable, I guarantee you I am, because I know what happens when I leave. They're just fine. Right. And so then when you understand yourself that you are replaceable, and then you can pass that mentality on to the people you work with, then I feel like that's the easiest way for it to spread. So now, like today, when I work with people, I say, man, you are replaceable. And they'll be like, what? And I'll be like, I'm replaceable. None of us. Literally, right. Not one single one of us is irreplaceable. And that culture is very important.
It is. And you, again, you're spot on. So you must have taken your bullet coffee with your brain stuff going, because your leadership points are spot on. If you are a leader and you feel like you've got somebody on your team that is irreplaceable and you have to overlook their idiosyncrasies and the way they treat people, I'm telling you now, that person will kill you. They will kill you if you keep them around.
They have the power.
They will kill you if you get rid of them, or get them right.
Right. And get them right. You don't got to get rid of them. Get them right. Get them right.
Get them right first, but you may have let it go on too far.
Well, but if they're not right, it's probably your fault, right? Like, you let them get that way.
Yes.
So don't take it out on them.
Yes. Yes. Once again, I stand corrected. Get them right first. Right? We don't just discard people because they've gone a little sideways. Check ourselves as leaders first. Get those people right. Make sure everybody understands that everybody's replaceable. Get some humility. But if it gets out of control, you know, nobody is irreplaceable. It's the only thing that you need to remember.
Just because I depend on this job for my pay doesn't mean I will ever let you talk to me that way. Oh, tell me, who do you think you are? Who the hell do you think you are?
This is the Leadership in Tech Podcast. If you want to know more about the show or the Tech OnRamp, go to www.techonramp.com. You can also find all of Season 1 and Season 2 so far, as well as our blog, our newsletter sign up, and more. This show is available on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, Player FM, Pocket Casts, and Stitcher. For more about the companies involved in making this possible, check out Salt.io at www.salt.io and Leader193 at www.leader193.com. Tune in next Thursday for the next episode of the Leadership in Tech Podcast, presented to you by the Technology OnRamp.
Yeah. big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.